सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है।
वेलकम टू सोच विचार। इफ यू बीन फॉलोइंग दिस पॉडकास्ट एंड इफ यू हैव रेड माय बुक एंड माय वर्क यू विल अप्रिशिएट दैट इकोनॉमिक्स होल्ड्स एंटरप्रेन्योरशिप एज सेंट्रल टू इकोनॉमिक डेवलपमेंट एंड ग्रोथ। Entrepreneurship is what has led to the advancement of economies like the US, UK, and Europe. And this is something that economists have discovered long time ago since Schumpeter, and many other recent studies have shown that entrepreneurships are very important. In my book also, I have talked about how entrepreneurship has to be differentiated from rent seeking and business. Today, we are going to look at entrepreneurship from a very different angle. We have studied entrepreneurship with Phil Ourswald and other people to see what thinkers are saying about entrepreneurship. Today, I'm actually going to talk to two people who are actively engaged in A, entrepreneurship, B, developing entrepreneurs, C, developing new entrepreneurial businesses, and D, they are also incubating, that means teaching entrepreneurship, mentoring entrepreneurs, mentoring businesses that are entrepreneurial. So today it's going to be a very special episode to talk to two entrepreneurs who know what entrepreneurship is, who teach it, who actually practice it, who actually put their own money into entrepreneurship. So let me introduce my guests. I have first Khurram Zafar, a well-known entrepreneur. He has set up companies in Silicon Valley in the West. He has also set up Plan 9 here in ITU with Omar Saif. He has also set up the LUMS Incubator for Entrepreneurship. He has also been with the Stock Exchange of Pakistan as a chief technical officer. He's also a member of the HEC Development Fund, and he serves in several other capacities purely to help entrepreneurship. My next guest is Faisal Sherjan, who is a close friend and collaborator with Khurram Zafar. Faisal Sherjan has worked in marketing and media in many places. He has been a key spirit behind Jio and the news. He has worked for many years in England. He has set up a venture capital fund in England. He is actively engaged in setting up companies in Pakistan. Faisal Sherjan now runs the LUMS Incubator, and Khurram Zafar helps him, although Khurram now has his own venture capital fund, one of the first such funds in Pakistan. I deeply appreciate these two gentlemen taking out their time, and I've always enjoyed their company and learned a lot from them. So this is going to be a fascinating discussion, and we will discuss what an incubator is, what entrepreneurship is, and what how setting up a business goes. So I urge all you kids out there who are dreaming of having their own business and setting up big business to listen to this podcast. You can learn a lot by entrepreneurship, and I urge you to get in touch with these two gentlemen who are very approachable and very kind and would like and have a spirit of setting up entrepreneurship. They call themselves entrepreneurial evangelists. That means they are the priests of entrepreneurship. They preach entrepreneurship, they live entrepreneurship, they breathe entrepreneurship. They want to make Pakistan an entrepreneurial country. They have the spirit and the heart of making Pakistan grow. So here it goes. Listen to Faisal Sherjan and Khurram Zafar. So here it goes.
Okay, welcome Khurram and Faisal. We've heard a lot about your LUMS Incubator, and I believe that you have been doing a lot of incubating. You've got a number of good companies in place. Can you please tell us what an incubator is and what do you hope to achieve?
An incubator primarily is a space where you discover, you select, you bring young entrepreneurs, right? So you go through a process of selection and you bring them in, and the purpose of the incubation or the incubator is to prepare them. Right, to prepare their businesses, help them take their businesses forward till they get to a stage that those businesses become attractive enough for investors.
So you're basically babysitting or incubating companies for going into the market and becoming Google's and Facebook's in the future. Is that right, Forum? Would you agree with that?
Yes. I guess we don't expect every company to be the Google or Facebook in the future. The real spirit of an incubator is one, to evangelize entrepreneurship. That's probably the most important function we serve here. We go out to universities, we go to career fairs, we set up a stall and we say, look, you don't have to work for a company and let someone else tell you how to lead your professional life. You can work for yourself also. And it's possible because other kids, other young professionals, just like yourself, are doing it. And we've got plenty of examples right here at National Incubation Center, as well as a lot of other incubators and accelerators that have popped up in the country over the past 4 or 5 years. The second thing we do is, from all the evangelism that takes place, we scout promising entrepreneurs that show, that passion, that zeal, and the courage to not, take up a job at a multinational company and solve a problem and create some value in the world with resources that they don't currently control. So there's a process of scouting that we generally take all the applicants through. The third thing we do is mentor and groom them. And one thing that we have seen consistently is that a lot of the kids that make it into the program, they're very energetic, they're very passionate, and any direction you point them towards, they run very fast in that direction. So we need to continue to make sure that there's a process of course correction that goes on when they join.
But then what you're telling me is that you people are not only creating entrepreneurship, but you're also preaching, telling the world. I hate to evangelism is a hard word, so I'm trying to translate it for our audience, that you're trying to tell people that, hey, this is another course, because we are so used to thinking of employment. Since the colonial days, all my father, my grandfather, everybody sought employment. I myself started my career as an employee because I never thought I could do it on my own.
Right.
And you're saying that our kids have a third path, that they can become entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
But tell me, what is an entrepreneur?
An entrepreneur is somebody who goes out to solve a problem, right? He or she is passionate. Mm-hmm. They're very observant. They look around themselves. They see what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And when they identify a problem, they actually see it as an opportunity.
So it's not somebody with a textile mill?
Not necessarily.
Because I thought it was somebody with a textile mill. That's what you were taught when you were school.
That's a businessman. Not necessarily an entrepreneur.
I think a key element in entrepreneurship is that you're solving a problem, so you're creating value in the world. But the premise generally tends to be that you do that with resources that are not fully in your control, right? It's very unlike setting up a fourth textile mill, or a fifth feed mill, or a sixth sugar mill, in the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's the key differentiator.
So please give me an example of an entrepreneur. Like, for example, you guys, what have you done in life that you would regard as an entrepreneurial venture? Or, for example, what we know these big names like Bill Gates or whatever, whoever. I mean, you just give me an example of entrepreneurs that people can understand. What you
so I, when I'm evangelizing entrepreneurship, I like to quote examples of people who, the audience can relate with. So most of the times you're talking to kids who are graduating from colleges. Mm-hmm. And I give the example of the Maru Tandur kids, the four second-year students at LUMS that wanted to change the culture of Tandur in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
They went out, they had a horrible experience buying a roti or a naan from the shabbiest dhaba or corner store in their locality. And they said, yaar ki sari duniya roti khati hai, naan khati hai. Aur ye, it's one of the worst consumer experiences of buying a roti. Sabse gandi dukaan hogi. Pasina gir raha hoga, aate gir raha hoga, akhbar ke andar lapet ke, purane akhbar ke andar, you don't know where the akhbar has been. And these kids said, we're going to change that culture, and why can't a tandoor be like a coffee shop, right? So they, model town, they found a shop, and they painted it nicely, they had granite counters, they had a point of sale system, a ticket system, and they created a great experience for anybody who was buying naan and roti. And then they started, you know, adding more products, you know, Nutella naan. They've actually introduced an entire new category of naans in the country. That
category of food in India.
Yeah, absolutely, across the country. So, you know, when you see examples of kids like that, who are not graduates, second year students, four of them get together and introduce and create a new category of food in the country and do mashallah really well, that really inspires kids.
So it doesn't have to be Google or Facebook.
No, it doesn't have to.
It can be as basic as just a map.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely.
So it can be like any kid going out there and solving any problem in society. Like, for example, hey, how about me getting fast food in my office or something, right?
Absolutely. Delivering food, simple things, right? Like, we met some girls from the Canadian Food and Nutrition Department, right? They were exhibiting at LUMS as part of an HSE exhibition. So then we went there and we spoke to them. And we said, look, the kitchen is a lab, so bake us a cookie that can fulfill the entire nutritional requirements of a child, right? One single cookie for a whole day. Right. And you have to do it with less than 20 cents. So they're actually working on it. So we brought them here again. We put them through the design thinking workshop. So we could open up a little more in terms of, you know, their imaginative side of things.
So I guess the most important lesson I've got so far is that I have to broaden my definition of entrepreneurship.
Yes.
Because the way I looked at entrepreneurship, what I've been taught in school and in college is entrepreneurship is a guy who sets up a factory or a business something.
Yeah.
Factory, I mean, mostly we've talked about it as a factory.
Yeah.
But you're deconstructing that.
Yes.
And people are saying, yeah, ye factory ki zarurat nahi hai.
Bilkul.
Ek naan bhai bhi entrepreneur
ho sakta hai.
Ek chai wala bhi ho.
Bilkul hai.
Case in point, mere dimaag mein aata hai Starbucks. Would you regard Starbucks an entrepreneur?
Bilkul hai. Aur local dekh le na, ab chai khan. Right, they started in Islamabad, husband and wife, right? They had a bit of money to spare.
Yeah.
Right? The wife wanted to do something, so they set up Chai Khana. Today, they're franchising.
Mm.
They're charging, $120,000 for a franchise for Chai Khana.
Mm.
Right? So, it does not have to be just technology.
Mm.
Technology will inevitably come into anything once it starts to scale.
It's a tool.
Yeah, it's a tool. Once it starts to scale, when I have 20 Chai Khanas, and I need to now centralize buying, and I need to centralize recipes, and I need to do all that. I need to create a model. I will use technology. So it will come. Then there are the deep tech companies, right, that will bring in technology to make a big change, you know, to scale faster.
Mm-hmm.
Technology normally helps you to scale faster. Right? That's really what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And some problems that cannot be solved. Like, IoT is an opportunity area, you know, which is tremendous. You can use it almost in any
Internet of things.
You can use it on almost anything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we try to tell these kids, think and look at your landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Right. See what is all there. So if you have high mobile penetration, then that's possibly the space to go into. Right. So start thinking mobile first because you have a high level of mobile penetration.
But supposing there is a kid sitting in Jamshore or Attak or something. Let's get out of, I know you people are sitting in LUMS, this is a rarefied space, mashallah, excellent facilities, etc., etc. But A, Lahore is not Pakistan, B, LUMS is not average student. Think about somewhere in Attak or Quetta or Jamshoro. How would you tell that kid to think about entrepreneurship?
I would tell that kid the story of Chaudhary Iftikhar.
Mm-hmm.
Chaudhary Iftikhar was not a very well-educated man. Had a motorbike in late 90s, decided to quit his job one day and, you know, do something for himself. He got a baking oven, started baking biscuits and started selling them in a small neighborhood in Multan, in his neighborhood. And from there on, Chaudhary Iftikhar scaled his business to what is, you know, what has billions in revenues today, right? Chaudhary Iftikhar has a passion. It's called SM Foods.
Okay.
So, Nanna Biscuit, you've heard brands or not, resonates
Giggly,
a lot.
Giggly.
Giggly, Boom Boom Bubblegum, you know, that's their brand. Recently, they've done marketing recognition. But, you know, people like Chaudhary Iftikhar are a great role model. People who are not in, you know, Tier 1, KLI type cities, in dense entrepreneurial ecosystems with a lot of investors around. But they were strong-willed. They had the intent that I have to do something and I have to do it for myself. I have to do anyone's work. I have to listen to anyone's stories. I have to do my own work. I will do a small work, I will earn money, but I have to do it for myself. And once they start doing it, then they had ambition and a will to scale that business gradually. Overnight success kisi bhi karobar mein nahi aati. It takes, you know, decades to build a large company. Hamare aksar humne dekha hai ki jo entrepreneurs hain wo kehte hain ki aaj hum idea aaya hai, parson hum product bana le, tarson investment kar de, aur chauthe din, you know, hamari So it takes a lot of perseverance, it takes a lot of passion, it takes a lot of hard work, most importantly. A lot and lot and lot of hard work. And that's one of the, you know, jo Einstein ye jisme bhi kaha tha ki it's genius is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. It's equally true in the field of entrepreneurship also. Aapko idea ek acha aaye doesn't mean anything. Ideas are a dime a dozen. आप 50 वेबसाइट्स हैं जहाँ पे जाके आप सर्च कर सकते हैं कि व्हाट आर द नेक्स्ट 100 बिग आइडियाज इन द वर्ल्ड राइट
बट आप लोग जो कह रहे हैं अनदर थिंग दैट आई हियर इज कि द आइडिया इज राइट देयर इन योर सोसाइटी इन योर एनवायरनमेंट
एब्सोल्युटली
डोंट लुक टू गूगल डोंट लुक
या यू डोंट नीड टू
द आइडिया इज राइट देयर इन योर सोसाइटी इन योर नेबरहुड यू सी
द आइडिया इज द प्रॉब्लम ऑल ऑफ अस लव टू सिट इन आवर ड्राइंग रूम्स इन अराउंड लंचेस एंड कैफेज एंड you know, around khokas, and talk about the problem. Yaar, aaj ye problem hai, aaj ye wo problem hai, ye problem hai. Each one of those problems is basically a business opportunity. Anybody who can address it, fix that problem at scale, price it right, distribute it properly, has a business in their hands. So every problem is disguised, is basically an opportunity in disguise.
So you have to switch the way you think.
Absolutely.
Instead of looking for a business, look for a problem.
Look for a problem, right?
Most of us look for a business, look for a feasibility. You're saying no. Find an idea, find a problem and solve it. But then tell me.
It's actually very personalized also. Most of the most passionate entrepreneurs we come across are the ones who say, I have this problem. Cheyenne Sohail is an example. Park Straw. Now he moved from Karachi to Lahore. And he was always drinking bottled water. So when he moved to UET in Lahore, he drank water from the tap and he fell really seriously ill. For about 4 months, he could not get rid of the diarrhea that he had. And he had lost something like 30 pounds in that time. And that is when he decided, I'm going to lick this problem. He started looking at it and saying, how big is the problem of clean drinking water? And he realized it's a massive problem. So he came up with a solution. He is a chemical engineer, so he used his knowledge to actually solve the problem that he had experienced himself. So a lot of them come to that. They see what's around them. They see what's happening. They've experienced it. They get others to buy into that idea that they have or the problem they've identified. And from there, the gestation of the idea takes place and then they start working on it.
Okay. But tell me, now, I see what you're saying. And I think it's very important. Okay. We have to observe the society, especially the economy around us. We have to see what people need. For example, somebody might find babysitting is a problem.
Yes, absolutely.
Or somebody might feel that, office lunch delivery is a problem, solve it, or whatever, education is a problem. But then I think there's a short step from here to children saying, okay, I will not study, I will solve problems around me. Is that what you would recommend?
Absolutely.
Is there a certain...
What does studying mean? What does studying mean? What does acquisition of a degree mean? If I'm not going to be able to apply what I've studied, we come across a lot of entrepreneurs who studied entirely something different. Their degree says something different, and now they're doing something totally different. So we need to rethink education also. We need to rethink the process of learning also. We need to rethink knowledge also, and saying, what does it really mean? Does it mean I have to have a degree that I put on my wall? Does it qualify? We know today that, the march of technology is going to make a lot of traditional knowledge redundant. Education is redundant. Ho chuki hai. Lekin agar hum ye nahi maanne ko taiyar, so we are not going to...
No, but supposing, if there's a kid, as I said, studying at Jamshore or Attak or Quetta, and let's say he's at whatever stage, FA, BA or whatever, what would you recommend that he does? Should he give up his education or... Does he need alternative education? Or how should he prepare himself for life as an entrepreneur?
Dekhiye, mere khayal mein, whether you're in Jamshoro or Ladkana or whatever remote area, chances are they'll have access to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Chances are there's somebody in the family who has a computer, or you know, maybe they can get one of those old PCs and get connected to the internet. If you're connected to the internet, you have the world's knowledge at your disposal. There's a great experiment that Sugata Mitra did in India, the hole in the walls experiment.
What he did tell us about it. Yeah,
yeah, so what Sugata Mitra did was he took a computer, rundown computer, put it in a slum in India. And all the computer had was a screen, keyboard, and mouse, right? And he left it there. Did not teach any of the kids in the slum about what a computer is. And the computer was, you know, I don't know whether it was connected to internet or not, but it had a lot of content in it. He did not teach anybody how to use a computer. The kids did not know English, which was the operating system in which the computer was running. They did not know what a mouse was, what a keyboard was. And solely driven by their own curiosity and instinct, these kids started using the computer and learning different and became very knowledgeable in areas that interested them. You know, somebody liked paleontology, and they started this knowledge map, knowledge walk towards becoming really good at paleontology or astronomy or physics or chemistry or whatnot. And it was completely driven by their curiosity, the natural curiosity in kids. So I would encourage them. I mean, education is important. I mean, you get some basic values, and some basic skills of analytical skills and reading skills and networking skills and how to engage with people around you. So education is important, and if you're lucky enough to have good teachers, there's no substitute for that, because a good mentor can really change your life drastically. So kids in Jamshoro, I would encourage them to, one, find good mentors around them. You know, stay away from people who tell them that you can't do this or you can't do that. Right? These cynics and people who only see problems and every opportunity, they're toxic. You need to stay away from them. The other thing I would encourage them to do is to figure out a way to get access to the internet through the computer, and then YouTube, Wikipedia, all these Udemy's and Coursera's, they are full of free content, free knowledge that anybody who's seeking knowledge can get access to and become smart about any field that interests them.
I came across an example, right? There's a school in Chakwal. In 1937, it had two alumni there. One was Dr. Abdul Salam and one was Manmohan Singh.
Oops.
School in Chakwal. I'm sure Chakwal at that time was nowhere more developed in comparative terms than Lahore was.
Absolutely. It was probably a village.
It was probably a village, right? So a village school produced these two people. So it's a question of where the barrier lies. And largely it lies in the mind. Right? Yes, it may be a little more difficult than, let's say, a kid in Lahore. Number one, the incubator in Lums, we only have 10% intake from Lums. So 90% is from outside of Lums. Right? So that's one thing. Yes, we want to bring in more kids from different areas of the country, right? The issue we have right now is, where do we house them? How do we do that? So we're trying to resolve that problem also. It is the only problem we've tabled and said, this is what we want to solve now as the next issue. Okay. Opportunity lies everywhere, right? So imagine that child from Jamshoro, right? What is his likely path, right? If he does his fellowship, then he does his bachelor's. Now he's looking for a government job, right? That's his path, right? He's going to say, I'll get a government job and that's it. I'm set for life. Right?
But tell me now, I get your message. I think it's a very good message. I think we need to get it out to the kids, because there are tons of kids who are roaming around everywhere. I'm sure they turn up at your place too. I've dealt with them too.
Oh, yeah.
Sir,
yeah.
I have a resume. Find me a job. And it's very difficult. So, yes, of course. I remember there was a job of a peon in the High Court. And the chief secretary told me there were 50,000 applicants.
Absolutely. And there's some of them must be masters.
Yeah, masters.
Absolutely.
MPs. So, yes, entrepreneurship is the third way. But I have two follow-up questions. Yeah. One is, what is the need for an incubator? If you look traditionally at entrepreneurship, John D. Rockefeller, Carnegie, the big traditional, or Bill Gates.
Or Chandrasekhar at Forum Edge.
Yeah. They didn't need an incubator. Yeah, so why do we need an incubator?
You just want to increase the probability of success. Okay. And you want to seed the concepts. And you want to seed those ideas. And say, listen, anything that you see around you is an opportunity if you see it as a problem, or it's a problem for somebody else. That's the first. So it's really evangelizing and saying entrepreneurship is definitely
Certain skills, Khurram, that an entrepreneur requires? I mean, should there, for example, be, okay, fair enough, I spot a problem, right? Like the non-problem, I spotted the problem. But do you need further skills to make that come to fruition or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you first of all, I believe in order to be a successful entrepreneur, one of the most critical skills you need is communication skills, networking, infecting others with your vision. You know, that's one of the fundamental traits of a good, successful entrepreneur, that they're able to, yes, they got inspired to solve a problem, but how do you get others, when you don't have any resources, how do you get others convinced that this is a problem worth solving and why they should be part of that venture? Right? So communication skills are very important. If you don't have a communication skill, then you need to recognize that that's a skill that you don't have, and then you need to immediately find a co-founder who has good communication skills. Right? That's the other thing that's very important. You know, entrepreneurship doesn't have to be a solo, lonely journey. Right? Entrepreneurship is generally, most successful companies that you look at around the world, there's always, you know, two founders, sometimes three founders, right? It's very rarely a single person who made it all happen by himself or herself, right? So always know yourself, know what your strengths are, know what your weaknesses are, and find a co-founder who complements you, who you know, bridges the voids that you have, and you know, overall, in your founding team, you have a nice, you know, complement of skills. Next, you need to be extremely hardworking. You need to be a good listener. In order to figure out what the problem is, and why that problem exists and what should be a good solution, you need to have good analytical skills, you need to have good listening skills. And this is something you can, I believe, train yourself in. We run one of our key sort of flagship program. You asked, you know, earlier, Faisal, why do we need incubators, right? Yes, that is, you know, one of the reasons incubators kind of speed up the path to eventual, you know, success or failure in both cases. Oftentimes, we have entrepreneurs that join the program. We mutually set goals and milestones. They're not able to meet it, and we are observing them, you know, throughout the time that they're here. And then we have sort of a come to Jesus meeting with them and say, look, you know, let's give it another shot. These are the goals for the next month. If you meet them, that means you're serious about them. These are not unrealistic goals. But if you don't meet them, maybe entrepreneurship is not for you. Yes. Spend a couple of years in the industry, build your network, you know, maybe find another problem that inspires you more and come back and solve it. And similarly, in the case of success also, the objective is to sort of speed up the process by helping you know, connect entrepreneurs with mentors or investors and customers or whatnot. So I lost my train of thought.
You were saying that you need a number of skills. Communication, the other is co-working, the other is team leadership.
Yeah.
But let's go and think, like, for example,
you need to be a hard worker.
For example, making a business plan. How difficult do you see that?
It depends on what you consider to be a business plan. I could write five lines, and that's a business plan. Or I could delve deeper and deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, to me, a business plan is four things only.
Mm-hmm.
Who's it for?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think it should be done?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do and how you want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
It's four. You can actually write, right, just five lines for each.
Okay.
And then you can go deeper and say, okay, now I've said this for...
How about knowing things like management, setting up a team,
yeah,
you know, all those things. Do you need to know all those things, or do you just...
It's very interesting that you asked this question. In the last selection, the current cohort we have, there was one entrepreneur who came and he made a pitch and he said, I'm going to create a marketplace for construction materials and for, you know, better form of construction and a more affordable form of construction. So he said, I'm going to put a calculator there so you can calculate what kind of structure you want, the gray structure. Right? What's your budget and all that?
Right. Mm.
So he was finally asked by one of the seven people sitting there, hard-nosed business people. And one of them said, what's your qualification? He said, what do you mean, what's my qualification? He said, I've been here for, I was thinking, I'm a metric here. But I've got 18 years of experience in the business.
Right.
So there were three other mentors who fought for him and said, we want this guy here.
Mm.
Right? And he's doing better than a lot of the others who come here with masters and MPhils and even PhDs. So it's a question. Purpose is a very important factor, right? Purpose is as important as passion is.
Talk about another thing which I have learned recently, which I never thought was important, but recently reading about your area has put me in touch with this. Don't forget, the way I was raised, and I'm sure you also, you're younger, but you also might have experienced it. We were taught two things. One is never question.
Yeah.
Two is never fail.
Yeah.
So if you asked a stupid question, you had egg on your face.
Yeah.
If you failed, you were a pariah.
Absolutely.
You never, nobody talked to you, everybody called you, you were a failure.
Absolutely.
Now, from what I hear in entrepreneurship, you need it differently.
Yes, you do. Number one, you have to be fearless, right? So you have to be a risk taker. That is another of the competencies that you need to have. Then you start to temper it with calculated risk. And failure is going to be part of the journey, right? So you will not necessarily succeed, or you may, right? I've had failures.
You don't have egg on your face if you fail.
No.
You're not down upon failures, huh?
No, absolutely not. I think being an entrepreneur, you need to grow thick skin.
Yeah.
You need to be able to...
Have you personally failed?
Yes, absolutely. Many times.
Give us an example.
Well, one example is my fourth company, Insight Technologies.
Mm-hmm.
That's a company that there was a second product company that I started with my co-founder, Shankar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a product and technology we were very, very passionate about. We really thought was a problem to a solution to all problems that business process outsourcing companies, and these were huge companies. So we built a product that basically can track and observe what agents were doing at BPOs,
okay,
and identify who the best performing agent was and replicate the way they were, solving a business process in a computer,
mm-hmm,
to other agents to basically improve the productivity of BPOs across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an enterprise product. We built the product. We took it to market. We had early customers. Enterprise products require a lot of time and a lot of resources to sell. It's a long sort of song and dance with enterprise buyers.
Mm-hmm.
And we had limited resources. We basically pooled our own capital to bootstrap the business.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that the BPO, there were lots of turnaround in the BPO industry in India. Mm-hmm. eServe and IXL were our two early prospects. So we were talking to and spend, a good 6 months,
mm-hmm,
soliciting them, sort of doing the demos and, convincing the management, going up all the way to the people who were going to write the checks. But eventually the management changed and we had to restart the process. So we had to make a decision whether to continue with the business and invest more money in sales and marketing, or we shut it down and do something else. I decided to part ways with the business. So there was a...
You lost money and you
lost
time.
Lost time.
But it did not deter you.
No, absolutely not.
Sort of,
absolutely not. Huh? Absolutely not. You can't let failure...
And your friends are not laughing at you saying you have for them fail. Huh?
Absolutely.
So what about your story first?
Oh, I've got multiple ones. Because I'm incredible. So the one I would talk about is 1998. I started one of the first ISPs in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I think there were just one or two.
Okay.
And it's called Pi Communications.
Internet service provider.
Okay. And I tried to do it. I thought I was doing it a little more intelligently than it was there. I had a bit of experience from what I had done in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the only ISP that actually had a quick launch pack.
Right.
Right. So I'd gone and done a deal with Shell, and through their petrol pumps,
mm-hmm,
we would sell the quick start pack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you would just bring the quick start. It was just one CD that you'd bring home. You pay for it, you bring it home. You'd put it in your computer and you would launch. It was an auto launch thing.
Mm-hmm.
So technically everything was right. Right? We had some of the best technology.
Right.
We had parked ourselves about 500 meters from the Sabzi Mandi Exchange in Karachi,
mm-hmm,
right, with huge bandwidth and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But we were too early. Right? PDCL's charges were too high. So the only way you could actually make money was terminating phone calls, grey traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the choice.
So once again, you lost time and money.
Yeah, I lost time and money. And
So let's put it this way, it's okay to fail.
Absolutely.
And but you should learn from your experience and move on.
Yeah.
Right?
Rishta phir bhi mil jata.
Rishta guarantee.
Bade achhi baat hai. Theek hai, rishta sabko mil
jata. Absolutely. Mujhe
ek baat batao ki, having said this now, and yes, this is the third part, and yes, we've got 120 million kids under the age of 30.
Yeah.
Got 100 million kids under the age of 20.
Yeah.
And I, being an economist, I worry about the fact if these kids don't find employment,
yeah,
we may end up in a very bad situation.
Absolutely.
I hate to, you know.
No, it's true. It's true.
Yeah. So
the biggest problem we're going to have is from our rural communities.
Yeah.
Because the age of the farmer is actually going up all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Young people are not interested in taking up farming because there are other options,
mm-hmm,
right, which are less stressful, which are less taxing, you know, which are easier labor.
And actually less risky.
Less risky also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So can you imagine, you know, what's going to happen when all these kids start moving into the cities with no skills for the city? And it's already happening. Right? You cannot find farm labor today.
So tell me now, how is the government, I mean, now put yourself in the shoes of the policymaker. How would you advise the government, okay, how should they make space for more entrepreneurship? Or are you telling me there's enough space for entrepreneurship right now? By space, I mean policy-wise, regulation-wise, another thing.
No, there isn't.
Do we need to fix something there?
Absolutely, a hell of a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
A lot of things. In fact, there's a whole document right now which a lot of people are contributing to that Khurram initiated. And that is exactly designed to come up with a framework that we can take to the government and say, listen, these are the problems. Right? You have to create an environment. You have to create a minimum viable environment right, for people to create minimum viable products.
Yeah.
Right? So there are many issues right, from the SEC.
So can you tell us what's in there?
Well, I mean, it's very focused on the entrepreneurial ecosystem, the investment landscape and the problems and opportunities and what the government ought to do in that. But even before that, I think one of the, you know, I'm not a, not to, to make this political, but there was a lot of human cry when the Punjab government decided to give out laptops to kids. You know, itne mehenge laptops leke inko distribute kar rahe hain, koi wajah nahi hai, you know, koi isse constructive kaam nahi hoga, ispe game khelenge baith ke. I had a different opinion, not because of any political inclination or anything. I thought that those laptops were a window into the world that, you know, these kids otherwise would not be exposed to. Aapke paas ye free Wi-Fi wagera bhi laga rahe hain. Punjab government is doing, has done some, you know, very good work in this space. And, you know, hamara jo main challenge hai, that is, you know, raising the intellect level and education level of our kids that we are talking about to where they are productive members of society and either can contribute, you know, to the industry, whatever the industry of the future ought to be, or and become, you know, entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know what's going on in the world. You need to know, you know, what the, if you have to do something big, if you want to put a dent in the universe, as Steve Jobs says, you need to be aware of what's going on in the universe, right? So we need to get them access to knowledge and connect them to not just, you know, within the country, but outside the country also. So we need more programs like that. We need to focus on grassroots level, getting them basic education, numeric, you know, everybody needs to
changing,
be numeric
changing
literacy.
The syllabus, changing the environment of learning, you know. That's necessary.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be done in, you know, using the traditional model of brick and mortar. You know, a kamra hai, uske andar whiteboard hai, a teacher kada hua hai. Maybe, you know, the future is done through holograms and everybody has access to really cheap way to access holograms. We don't know what the future is going to hold. But that ought to be, you know, one of the key focus of the government. Solving the education problem.
Okay. So solving the education problem, giving them access to the world.
Yes, absolutely.
Number 3.
Yeah. Number three, I think government is already doing, you know, in its own right, and as far as entrepreneurship goes, both the Punjab government, you know, KP government lately, and, you know, the federal government, they have launched these programs over the past 4 or 5 years where these incubators are being created, accelerators are being created, impact challenges are being launched in KPK, for example, National Incubation Center, initiated by the federal government. And these are all basically programs in order to, strengthen the entrepreneurial ecosystem, to create platforms where these kids from Jamshoro or, you know, Larkana or, you know, Hafsabad or Bahawalnagar can come and get access to mentors, to customers, to investors, and, you know, grow and scale their businesses. So they're already doing a good job there. I think the next phase is, you know, all of these startups that are getting created, how do you channel early stage risk capital into these startups? Right? Our investors, local investors, are generally trained to invest in growth opportunities in industries, in another textile mill or another feed mill, right? So the business plans are ready made available for those kind of ventures. There's a lot of more predictability. It's very easy to place value and value these businesses. The raw material, itne ka hai, plant itne ka aayega, your working capital itna chahiye, project cost X hai, right? So, to char log agar paise daal rahe hain, to jo project cost hai, uske hisab se unko equity mil jayegi. In the case of knowledge economy businesses, the kind of startups that we see here in these incubators, there's a lot of value that ought to be placed in the intellectual property that they're developing. There's a lot of value that has to be placed in people that are developing that IP, because that's the real value. Uber, kya hai? Uber is a company that basically has a very simple app. They have algorithms to match, you know, the demand and supply in the cab industry, and they're a multi-billion-dollar company now. But it's basically, you know, the people, the algorithm, you know, the app of Uber that has value, right? An investor can't take Uber and start deconstructing it into its components and say, okay, yeh mez, kursi hai, or laptop or server or, you know,
yeah, wo to value hai.
That comes to, you know, multi-billion dollar value that it has. It doesn't. You know, it's a lot of intellectual property.
Let me take a different view now. Right. So that's one.
Okay.
On the policy side, the government really seriously needs to look at a lot of the regulatory framework that it has in place, starting from State Bank to FBR to SECB to PEPRA.
Actually,
the PEPRA rules are one of the biggest barriers for young innovators.
Interesting.
Right? So if I have an education entrepreneur, somebody who has the ability to create a great platform that can actually scale and give access to education to a large mass of kids, the most likely place that's going to happen is the state school system. Now, if you have PEPRA rules in place, they're not even going to get anywhere near it. Right? So that's a deterrent. Right? So we've seen that in real examples. They do not get access, right, to where the government is spending a lot of money.
Good point.
India's changed that. Right? India's startup package, the first thing they've done is 20% of all purchases by any government department or ministry has to be done through startups.
Right?
So that's a very, very simple thing that needs to happen. We understand PEPRA rules are designed, right, for a purpose.
To prevent fraud. Basically.
To prevent fraud. Yeah. But fraud prevention can be done in many other ways. Right? Otherwise, what happens? That same startup has to go to a bigger player, right? Has to ride on their coattails, right, to be able to provide the same solution.
In fact,
same.
The government ends up losing
absolutely
money rather than...
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, that's a big issue. The next thing, circular debt is not just in energy. Circular debt in the private sector is even bigger. A lot of these young entrepreneurs struggle because multinationals do not pay on time.
Yeah.
They will sign a contract with you. They will issue you a pay order which says payment to be made in 90 days. You don't realize your money in twice that amount of time. That's a killer,
yeah,
right? And then you come to the transaction side of things. So if you're doing any kind of commerce, right, how are you going to transact? You know, what is available for you? Right. State Bank is beginning to think and saying, okay, we need to make the economy a little more digital. We need to make currency a little more digital. Right. Things. So that needs to happen. So we are pushing as far as and as hard as we can and saying, ye cheezein jo hai, ye solve honi chahiye. Commerce ke 220 million ki market hai. It's a massive market. Right. So koi problem nahi honi chahiye.
International payments to bhi tak
nahi hai. PayPal from nahi hai. To karte kya hai? मैं अपने कजन के नाम पे कहीं अकाउंट खोलूंगा पेपैल का, उसमें पैसे जाएंगे, वो किसी तरीके से मुझे आएंगे. उसके मल्टीपल इश्यूज है, ठीक है ना. आपका जो फ्रीलांस बेस जो है, जो खुरम बता रहे थे कि लैपटॉप जो है इज़ अ गेटवे, राइट, इट्स एन एक्सेस पॉइंट टू दैट इंटरनेशनल ट्रैम. लॉट ऑफ किड्स आर डूइंग लॉट ऑफ स्टफ, राइट. आई हैव कम अक्रॉस वन यंग गर्ल, शी इज राइटिंग सीवीज, राइट, एंड शी इज चार्जिंग अ फेयर अमाउंट ऑफ मनी टू राइट अ सीवी. Right? She's developed her expertise in that area. So I asked her, how do you get payment? She said, that's a big problem. I have a lot of customers in Saudi Arabia, but they can't pay me. So I have a real, real issue. So these problems need to be solved. And they are solvable. They do not take
but
too
let
much.
Me, let me raise another thing. You know, I think let's also sort of look at it this way. What we just discussed is entrepreneurship can be anything from the knowledge economy, technology, to the hard goods. Now, so far we've been talking about the knowledge economy and the technology side.
Yeah.
What about the hard goods? Let's take the non-example or the example of the cookies or water or something.
Bilkul.
In that space, for example, where we are actually doing hard commerce.
Absolutely. Now, there is an informal economy. We know that there's a very large, huge informal economy, right? And here is the government and us also as incubators pushing our entrepreneurs saying formalize, form a proper company, right? Create a proper structure, report to SECP, file your returns with FBR and PEPRA and all that, right? So how do they do it? Because they've got a landscape which is skewed. There's one guy who's not doing anything. He's running a retail store, right? And he then becomes a chain called Al-Fatah, right? Or he becomes a Jalalson's chain, or he becomes Nahid's store chain in Karachi and all that. What route have they come? They've come through the very informal route, right? Big industries like transportation, right? Intercity bus services.
Totally informal. Yeah.
Totally informal. Real estate, totally informal. Crowdfunded. And then we have a company called Arazi.pk that comes out of the NIC, the Lums Incubator. And they want to do a crowdsourced thing, and SECP jumps on their back, right? And say, you can't do this, right? Because this is not allowed under the rules. Mm-hmm. So these things are real barriers.
So how do you see these changes, Khurram? I mean, is there a demand for this in the government? Does the government even understand this, for example? Does the government understand complex issues like crowdsourcing, like international payments, like mobile payments, like mobile, you know, this, that, etc. There's so many things. I've been in the government. I'm not sure whether they understand.
Well, yeah, I remember at a conference, somebody had quoted this, NASSCOM, which is a tech lobby group, equivalent of probably Pasha in India. Kisi ne unse pucha ke, you know, IT industry ko promote karne ke liye government kya kare. So famously, his president tha, usne jawab diya ki kuch na kare, just stay away from it. A lot of the ye jo Arazi ka example diya Faisal ne, isme government ne kya karna hai? SECP chup rahe, piche rahe. Let the entrepreneur do what he is doing, right? Crowdsource portal banaya hai taki jis bande ke paas 50,000 rupaye hain ya lakh rupaye hain ya 2 lakh rupaye hain aur wo DHA ke andar plot afford nahi kar sakta, you basically saying ki acha DHA mein ye plot hai, aap 100 log milke 50 lakh lakh rupaye dal ke ye plot khareed lo. Yeah, usko, the site will facilitate uski structuring wagera kar degi aur uske rules honge ki bech kab sakte hain, kitne profit ke baad bik sakte hain, kitne members vote karenge to bikega ye.
Any immediate, he has takers immediately.
So all the government had to do was nothing, right? Just not stop, just, you know, don't become an impediment.
Why would they stop something like that? What do you think was behind their thinking? Why did they stop it?
Maybe a lobby. Maybe somebody prompted them and said, this will completely change the landscape. This will change the way people want to invest in real estate. Right? So there are very powerful vested interests. Right? They're there and they will create impediments. Right? We also thought and said, why did they pick on Little Arazi? He hasn't, he's not like gone out and done a major multimedia campaign of any kind. Right? But he just suddenly got noticed. So,
or it could be, you know, the risk that somebody can, you know, run away with public money, right? That's a very legitimate risk. But the thing is, every time you're trying to break the mold, you're trying to disrupt, you're trying to come up with something that has never been done before, there's always risk associated with it, right? But the way to deal with the risk is not to shut it down and say, nahi, ye bilkul nahi aa sakte. The way to deal with the risk is you let them do it, you work collaboratively with them, you define rules, regulations to facilitate the business and obviously ensure that, you know, public money is, you know, somebody doesn't run away with public money. But our jo jhatka tarika hai isko band kar do, you know, agar na hoga baaz na bajegi baansri wala rule, that doesn't work, you know, in the innovation space.
No, but I think that's kind of cultural.
Yeah.
I mean, partly, you know, I have two little grandchildren and my daughter refuses to let them take risks. They're playing, and she's no. You know, so in a sense, we like to protect, overprotect our children. I say, no, let them play. No, she'll get hurt. So the only way he can learn is getting hurt. Mm. I'll take it further. For example, I've been arguing a lot with the government on city development.
Mm.
I think one thing that I also want to close on and bring you to this is, I've noticed through the literature that city development has a lot to do with entrepreneurship.
Yes.
For example, there is a reason why entrepreneurship took place in Florence, navigation, etc., or Venice, or, you know, then in London, and then there were the Paris fairs, etc., did something for entrepreneurship.
Estonia.
Yeah, and then you went to Detroit, for example. New York became the major hub, then Detroit, then in our Silicon Valley. I mean, the hubs also keep moving, and it depends on knowledge, and depends on ecosystems, etc. You're absolutely right. So, is there something that you can say about city development? And the reason I bring this up is that whenever I raise this with the powers that be, the government, especially the bureaucrats, and I tell them, hey, look, we must allow density in Lahore with more high rises, with more commerce, with more, you know, whatever mixed use space, etc. They quote to me the same thing, that the risks are too large. Mm-hmm. High rise building may collapse. Mm-hmm. I tell them, if it collapses, people are taking a huge amount of risk living in this country, just drinking water, they're taking a huge risk, right? You take a bus, people die, 200 people die, you know? So people are taking risks. The only risk that they're not allowed to take is to live on a higher story, right? But that seems to be our mindset. So how do you just comment on the city development? Is there a link or is there not a link?
Unless you have density of people congregating in spaces, in public spaces and private spaces, you will not have what we call the collision of ideas. You will not have sharing of ideas. You will not have sharing of knowledge. Coffee shops, right? Cafes. The more cafes that you're seeing coming up, you go there and you see kids sitting with their laptops, right, doing things. Now you want to extend that opportunity, right, to the ones who do not have access, easy access to the to Wi-Fi and all that. I'm an advocate in saying Wi-Fi should not be password protected, right? Find another way of security, but keep it open, right? Keep it open. And it happened. I've seen a protest going on in Karachi, and one message went out, one tweet went out and saying, we need to send pictures out, so please open up your Wi-Fi. And people around that area, they open up their Wi-Fi, and suddenly everybody had access, right? So now, with the phone in your pocket, all you need is a Wi-Fi connection, right? So you need to do that. Densities are important, right? The more we, and we know that, even from older periods, right, where you had the panchayat and you had people who would sit at a dhaba and they would discuss things.
Yeah.
They would talk about ideas, and from that, things would germinate and go forward. We definitely need that. I don't think there's any planning in our cities, right? So they don't think, nobody's thinking that way. Right.
In fact, there's a
wastage of space,
absolutely.
Huge amount of wastage of space.
Yeah. There's a guy called Stephen Johnson. He's written a book called Where Do Good Ideas Come From?
Mm.
And this is talking about the 16th, 17th century. He said the roots of the Industrial Revolution, the entrepreneurship, the innovation.
Yeah.
And after Industrial Revolution, entrepreneurship and innovation, right?
Mm.
He said the roots of it lay in the coffee shops.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
And that's and the density of London. So that's very important.
Yeah.
Okay, final thoughts. Very quickly, any final thoughts that the two of you have? Any final thoughts?
Look, I'm very, very hopeful about the future of Pakistan.
Okay.
I get to interact with, exchange ideas with the youth of the country. And their energy, their passion, the amount of hard work they're willing to put in, you know, assuming somebody's there to coach them and do the course correction for them, just mind-boggling. I think we are a huge market. You know, Pakistan itself is a huge market. I was giving you example of Chaudhry Iftikhar. He sells candies and, you know, one day, two rupees, a biscuit or, you know, lollipops and chewing gums.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, you don't even ask for his product and you buy it, because you go to a bakery and you buy something that's worth 27 rupees, you give them 30 rupees, you don't get 3 rupees back, you get his candy back. and that, you know, the product distributed right, price right, in you know, the reach of 27 million people in Pakistan, you can build multi-billion dollar companies also. in Pakistan. So I think we have the right market, you know, sixth largest economy in the world. We have a huge, you know, populous country. We have a lot of passion, a lot of energy in our youth. We just need a bit of direction. I think government is, you know, gradually introducing, you know, good measures. They're creating platforms to promote entrepreneurship, to promote innovation. And, you know, we just need to be patient. We can't, you know, Silicon Valley wasn't built overnight, right? Silicon Valley took all the way from, you know, the 20s, from Hewlett Packard, you know.
But the most important thing that you said is the government should learn to keep a light hand.
Yes, absolutely.
Be a little like a nurturing mother, like a not an overprotective.
And take a long-term view. You know, it takes time. It takes decades to build any.
Professor, your last thought.
I think more or less on the same lines. Like I said, you know, the government does play and has to play a very major role on the policy framework, in terms of the regulatory environment. We need opportunities, right? We need opportunities for investors also, just as much as we need for startups. Right now, an investor comes in, right, is taking a risk at a very early stage, a high level of risk, and there are no exits in view, right? It's a hope that somebody may come and acquire that business tomorrow and all that. So we need secondary exchange. We need people where people can go and raise money and create value.
I'm sorry,
creation of value is important.
I'm sorry I asked for final thoughts, but I've just thought of two more questions, which are really important. One is, I didn't talk to any, I didn't raise this, my fault, I didn't raise anything about capital markets.
Yeah.
Since you are trying to raise risk capital,
yes,
right? How do you see the risk appetite of investors? After all, there are people who have capital here.
Yeah.
How do you see the risk appetite, A, B, their understanding of what you're doing, and C, can the government do anything policy-wise to help those guys provide more capital to this?
Yeah, incentivize to start with.
Okay.
Right? I think with a population of 215 or 220 million, we have one of the smallest retail investor bases in the market. You know, the numbers are very small because there's no encouragement. Right. In fact, there are deterrences, so you can't really go and invest. My experience in the UK, I raised £1.6 million in 2000, right? And that was from a illiquid third-tier market called OFX, right? Where grandmothers and, you know, even young kind of office workers could invest up to £7,000 every year without any tax being levied on it, right? So those kind of incentives are important. So all money is being invested in the informal sector. Right, and not many of the entrepreneurs that we're talking about get access to it. Some of them do. Right, I know one who's doing really well, but I just got a question from him today and saying I actually need a short term, right, bridging of about 6 million, and so he'd had the same problem 5 months ago.
So, Khurram, what would you recommend? I mean, in terms of, there are tons of people that I know are sitting on cash.
Yes,
that might either go to DHA and buy a plot.
Yeah.
Right, and in fact, if they ask me, I tell them also go to DHN, buy a plot. It's risk-free, safe. You know what you're doing, etc. How can we tell them to invest in this risky?
Look, anywhere in the world, in the United States, with the Small Business Investment Company Act and later legislation regulations around that, in Israel, which is the second densest entrepreneurial ecosystem in the world, with the Yozma program in the 90s, one was, you know, the incentives are created for people to, you know, invest this in early stage in SMEs and in early stage tech ventures. Those incentives are either, you know, you underwrite the investments up to a certain impairment ratio, or you create tax incentives like in the SEIS program in UK, where you can write off some of the investment that you're making in startups in your taxes. And if you incur losses, you can again write off those losses also. So you need to create incentives for investors to pony up the money and invest in this space. The other thing I tell investors is, look, you're never going to, if you have 100 rupees to invest, if you're really wealthy, let's say you have $100 million to invest, you're not going to invest $100 million in real estate, right? A smart investor always diversifies. They'll put some money, keep some money in cash, they'll keep some money in bonds, they'll keep some money in real estate, they'll keep some money in, you know, other alternative asset classes. Keep, you know, 1%, 2%, 3% of your net worth, of your the risk capital that you want to invest in these various asset classes allocate 2%, a tiny percentage of it, in venture capital. It's a high risk, but high reward asset class, right? That's a key thing.
No, but Khurram, think about it. If there's a guy who's working in a, let's say, in a corporate environment, or let's say in a government job, and he saved, let's say, you know, a small amount of money, you know, and let's say he's willing to spend, let's say, 10 lakh rupees or something in something like this. His problem, the way I look at it, is information.
Yeah.
How do we figure out where to invest it? Is there something that SECP or your stock exchange, is there anything that can be done to bridge this gap? The way I look at it is, for example, how do small guys...
So, pehli baat to ye ki jiske paas 10 lakh rupay ki risk capital hai, I wouldn't advise them to invest in startups, frankly. You know, as I said, it's a very high risk, very illiquid asset class.
You can think that 10 lakh uske paas hai, which is investable in risk capital. Like, he's got some other money. So he's just taking, following your diversification principle, he's analyzing and saying, I've got 10 lakhs.
So even in that case, I think 10 lakh is too little money to invest in this space. What I would advise such people to do is find 10, 20 like-minded people who have thus these lakh rupees each, and create like a syndicate of angel investors. So that they, because you have to invest in 10, 15 companies.
Legal framework allow this kind of a fund to be developed? I mean, let me put it this way. Suppose if the two of you decided to set this up, and let's say we could raise capital, let's say we could raise ₹1 billion to do this, right? Not a small amount of money, but let's say we aim for ₹1 billion. Hmm. Can you get the legal permissions to do it or not?
So the answer is yes and no. Okay. I mean, the framework is there, but it's not optimized.
Okay.
What the government has done is in the private fund regulations that we just launched, they've taken the NBFC regulations and they've put some lipstick on it and said, okay, these are private fund regulations which are supposed to regulate venture capital and private equity.
Okay.
Again, NBFC and venture capital, both on the supply side and demand side, are fundamentally different.
Yeah.
On the supply side, with NBFC, which is primarily geared for mutual funds and mudarbas and such, you're dealing with public money, right? Mm. Auntie Shaida wants to invest, the 5,000 rupees on a bajake rakhe mein. On the demand On the demand side, they're dealing with highly liquid underlyings, public stock exchange ke upar listing and daily mark to market karke aap report kar sakte hain SECP ko jo bhi regulatory mere fund ki value ye hai. When you look at venture capital, both on the supply and demand side, they're very different. The supply side, you're dealing with high net worth individuals, you're dealing with institutions, you're dealing with pension funds, who are sophisticated investors, right? The demand side, you're investing in highly liquid assets. Startup, main aaj ek startup ko $1 million value karke agar usme $2 lakh invest karta hun, I have no idea what somebody else is going to value that startup the next week or the next day or the same day for that matter, right? They'll have, depending on what valuation methodology they're using, they'll have completely different value assigned to it. So if I am, made to follow the same kind of onerous reporting requirements, and on the supply side, I have to create trust structures which are necessary when you're dealing with public money, but not because aap ek high net worth individual hai, you give me $5 million to invest and you trust me as a fund manager, why do I need to have Razak Dawood or Babar Ali become the trustee of the $5 million, right? You don't need that. So I think legislation may be changed ki zarurat hai. I think incentives zyada create karne ki zarurat hai. Both ye planning commission pe Atar Osama hai, wo main help kar rahe hain. Yusuf Hussain at Ignite is working on it. There are lots of people in the ecosystem that are working towards documenting the problems and coming up with
You've set up a fund. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, so I set up a fund, and I'm ashamed that after struggling for a good year and a half and having the full desire to set it up in Pakistan, I just couldn't figure out a tax efficient and a stable way of doing it in Pakistan.
Really?
So yes,
you set it outside.
So I set it outside. So my fund is pooled in Cayman, and we have the investment vehicle is in Mauritius.
And you're going to invest it here?
We're going to invest
as a foreign investor.
Foreign investor.
And then
so in our case, it makes sense because the capital is foreign, right? I went to local investors also, tried to raise money. They're not quite ready for it yet. They need some examples. They need ek dafa Pakistan mein bhejcha hoti hai. Ek dafa investment karke rainfall aa gayi. Everybody is going to run after. Oh, yeah, kaise fund set up karte hain, startups mein kaise invest karte hain. So, wo jo nice, juicy, you know, success story in our space ki wo bhi create nahi hui. And it's going to take, you know, another 2 years.
Chale, very quickly, since I've talked about failures, give me your major successes.
I think, well, I go around, I'm an angel investor. That's how I came this route.
Okay.
That's how I met Khurram and that's how I ended up here. So I tell everybody I've got the best portfolio at the moment, right? And I haven't invested too much. I had limited amount of capital, but I invested with a certain thought process, right? So some of those companies are beginning to move. So that is, that gives me a lot of satisfaction. Not the money, right?
Any
money
particular one that you want to highlight?
Patari is there. In fact, I had a meeting on the weekend with the Fictive, right? Those two brothers, because they're really, really advanced. They've got a fantastic solution. And I've invested a very small amount of money, right? And I still have access to them. So if they're going to come in and formalize there. I said, look, you guys owe lumps, certain amount of equity, and that needs to be formalized. So there are things happening. Right? We are early. Now, one company that I invested in did not find lots of love in Pakistan, but it's found a lot of love outside of Pakistan. Right? They had a solution, right? They're data scientists. They created a very good solution for fleet management, for predictive analysis, and all that. Went to an accelerator in the Netherlands, is now incorporated in the Netherlands, have got about 350,000 euros of funding. I've got customers in Australia and Ghana and you know, all that. So, it is happening, right? I'm very confident also. Just like Khurram said, I have a lot of optimism, right? Because we come across these young kids. So, I meet them.
Khurram, before you came here, you had a lot of successes. Could you just quickly tell us about that?
Well, I don't know. Success is a relative term, I suppose. But I worked out of college for a couple of years for a consulting firm. And when I was, it was called FCW Consulting. It was a small boutique consulting firm that was offering consulting services for in the CRM space, customer relationship management space. So Scopus and, you know, Siebel were the big names at the time. And I met the co-founder at eForce, Nat, at one of my clients. And he said that he's looking to form this consulting firm. And he had a bigger vision even at that time also. He said, we're going to start with CRM and we're going to expand into a lot of other, you know, tech domains. So I decided to join them. Quit. The consulting firm was processing my green card. So that used to be a big, big thing and a big factor in decision making. Who you're going to work for and what you can negotiate in salary, because that used to be the carrot that everybody used to. But I decided to quit that because I thought it was a very promising opportunity. It was you know, something that I really wanted to do. eForce, mashallah, did well. We had 13, 14 offices worldwide. We ended up acquiring a company in Calcutta also. I really wanted to bring and open up a Pakistan office, but, you know, at that time, in the mid, you know, after the whole 9/11 thing, Pakistan was not the favorite destination to invest in at the time. But we did end up expanding to India. So in 2005, I decided to basically part ways from eForce. And that was a good exit. This gentleman, Shankar, who was my co-founder at Insight also, he approached me with an opportunity to invest in company called Appiance, and join it as a co-founder and CTO. Appiance was a very quick run. It was a company that had a tremendous IP, so we were able to quickly turn it around, sell the IP and operations, retains right to the IP, and we spun off from that IP Insight Technology.
IP is intellectual property.
Insight Technology is the company that I was telling you about, was citing as a failure. We invested in that, developed the product, took it to market, but the market changed, and, you know, we were at a stage where you had to decide, you know, pony up another, you know, $1 million or so to invest in the business or afford. So at that time, I decided to sort of part ways. I wanted to be in a position where I could retire and not have to work again. So I decided to settle in Pakistan at the time. Got into farming with a friend. Did a ton of farming for a couple of years. Very, very lucrative and productive and very rewarding work. Then joined the stock exchange as a CIO. And then back in 2013, decided to evangelize entrepreneurship.
Good.
And, you know, rounded up some SMEs. We had a meeting with the CM, arranged through a friend, Muhyiddin Wani. And we asked, like, look, it's been 10 years as a plan to make an incubator in Arfa Tower, and you haven't done it, so can you please help us do that? So, you know, credit to Umar Saif, he was able to extract funds for something like this from the Punjab government. And Plan 9 was started, so was with that for a couple of years as a board member.
Okay.
And came here to Lumps, started the Center for Entrepreneurship here. And now, you know, Faisal has the reins of the National Incubation Center. This, you know, is a large 23,000 square foot center funded by federal government.
Yeah.
So government is doing.
So it's funded by federal government.
Yeah, yeah.
Must give the government credit for it.
It's a $6 million grant by the federal government that will sustain the center for 5 years. Mm. And I decided to move on and founded this fund to invest in startups that are graduating out of this center.
Look, guys, fascinating. Thank you very much. My final question to both of you, which I ask everybody, is: what would you recommend for kids to look at? A book, website, movie, whatever you like. Just anything that you like, that you think it should definitely look at from your point of view to expand their horizons.
Well, my favorite recommendation to entrepreneurs is a book by the co-founder of Andreessen Horowitz, which is one of the largest tech funds. Ben Horowitz. It's called The Hard Things About Hard Things.
Mm-hmm.
Hard Thing About Hard Things.
Okay.
It's an amazing book, and you know, it's sort of like a deep dive into the mindset and the successes and failures of an entrepreneur. It's a great read.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's interested in getting ideas, you know, there's a small book called How to Get Ideas by Jack Foster. It's a good read.
Okay.
For professionals, for the industry, you know, running large companies, a book called Innovator's Dilemma, and that is a good read. It talks about the innovator's dilemma in large companies and how they're not able to innovate, and, you know, like companies like startups are able to do. So those would be my
recommendations. Oh, excellent. Those are great recommendations. I must say, I haven't seen two of them, so I'll go get them myself.
Okay.
Myself.
Books, Sapiens.
Oh, Sapiens.
Sapiens, right. I've just finished reading Homo Deus, which is the second one. So that's in terms of books.
Right.
Another one I came across, which is very interesting, was one of the founders of Twitter. Little Things That a Bird Told Me.
Okay.
Right. So that's also an interesting one. It's Biz Stone, right, the writer.
Okay.
Simon Sinek, right. Looking for Your Why.
Yeah.
And one that I recently read, which was sent to me by Shahid Khan, is Who Moved My Cheese?
Oh.
So definitely do read that, right? If you're an entrepreneur, if you're a startup, if you're a business person, a lot of the textile industry is actually saying, who moved my cheese?
Cheese will always be moved.
Cheese will always be moved.
Yeah.
So get back out into the maze, right, and find new cheese.
Thank you, folks. That was a fascinating conversation. I thank you with the bottom of my heart, and I think all the listeners will also value this. Thank you.
Soch Bachar ke saath, mera naam Nadeem-ul-Haq hai.
Aur mera naam Anjum Altaf hai.